Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack, a teaching ministry that focuses on God's unconditional love and grace. On today's program, Andrew interviews David Barton about the origins of Thanksgiving and America's godly heritage. And now here's Andrew.
Welcome to our Monday's broadcast of the Gospel Truth. Today, we have a really special treat for you. Today, we've got my friend David Barton with us. And David, welcome back to the Gospel Truth.
Good to be back, Andrew. Thanks for having me, bro.
We had you on, I don't even know, but it was at least 4, maybe 5 years ago. And we produced 2 weeks' worth of programs, and they were just spectacular. And I wanted to have David come back and share with you, you know, this is entering into our Thanksgiving season. And I tell you, there's just so much distorted history that we hear, especially around this time. And they're taking Thanksgiving and then turning it more into a harvest festival or something, and missing all of the godly background to it. And I thought, this is just a great time to have David come. Now, David, I don't know all of your credentials. You may have to correct me or give your own resume, but I know that you used to be a teacher in
Yes, sir.
The school system, a history teacher.
Actually, a math and science teacher.
Oh, excuse me.
I was a math and science teacher and a principal of a school and coached basketball and other stuff, too.
But anyway, you've got an interest in history, and that's what you've dedicated yourself to for how many years now?
We started about 25 years ago collecting original documents. And so now we have a collection of about 100,000 documents from before 1812. So handwritten stuff of George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and all those guys. Got tons of it.
And in my opinion, I don't know if everybody else agrees with this, but I would consider you to be one of the premier historians on early American history, especially the godly background to our history. And I think many people would recognize you as that.
Well, it's interesting. I've been appointed in a lot of states by state boards of education or governors or whatever to do the social studies standards in those states. And so we've done that with a lot of states, and then a lot of the public school textbook publishers, we help them in writing the textbook. So there's somebody that thinks we know a little bit about history anyway.
And, of course, there's a lot of people that don't like what you've
Absolutely.
Got to say because we have basically rewritten American history. And it is, I mean, the very first time that I had you on our program, I considered myself to be brought up in a Christian home. I was brought up in Texas where we prayed in public school, and my teachers were people that I went to church with. And so I felt like I had a pretty good upbringing. And yet the things you were saying were just astounding me. And I've gone back and done a lot of studying since then. And I found out that even with my conservative upbringing and basically a godly upbringing, I still drank a lot of the Kool-Aid that is being put forth today.
You know, one of the problems, well, like with me, people don't like what we bring forth because one of the things that we have found over the years is there's so much biblical and godly and religious heritage.
Yes.
And for secular folks, they call me a revisionist because they learned secular history and put God back in. They think, but I've always likened that kind of what happened with Paul when in Acts they said, he that turned the world upside down has come here. And it wasn't that Paul turned the world upside down. It had just been upside down so long that when he turned it right side up,
they thought
it was upside down. And in our case, what really goofs these guys up, they call me a revisionist, is I keep pulling out the original documents. Here's the handwritten document of the guy who said it. Really? Is this revisionism? And so going back to the original documents is the safest way to be accurate on history, but it drives people crazy because it's different from what they were taught. And it's kind of a disappointing thing, but we do a lot of internships at our place. A lot of people come in. We have interns. And I have found this year for the first time, and I knew it was going on, but we have a lot of interns that came in out of conservative Christian colleges, and they're now telling me that their history teacher says, anybody who says to you that God was involved in history doesn't know what they're talking about. And that's at Christian colleges. And if you're saying that, you've got to deny the Bible because this teaches us that God's involved in history. And so now we've got Christian colleges telling our kids, no, God doesn't get involved in history. Man, that talk about deism. Now, there's Christian professors that are saying if God doesn't get involved, they're the deists, not the founding fathers.
And so if Christian colleges and universities are saying this, what is happening in our secular colleges?
Yeah, what's happening in secular colleges is a lot rougher. There is a famous book out there, New York Times bestseller. It's in nearly every public school in America. And just the name of the book is a problem. and it's called Don't Know Much About History. Now, when you have to have a book in your public school that says you don't know much about history, that says how bad they're doing on teaching history. But it's a little easy book to go through, and you can go through and get all these highlights out of history. So he pulls out the heavy things in history that everybody should know about. And as you get into things like the American Revolution, it has, and there's a lot of white space in the book. You know, it's easy to read because it's not filled up with letters, a lot of white space. And it has in there about Patrick Henry. It's called Say You Want a Revolution. And so they have Patrick Henry, the famous speech he gave. Mm-hmm. They take two sentences out of it and put in there, you know, give me liberty, give me death. But right between the two sentences, they put a three-dot ellipse in there. And an ellipse means they took something out. And you go, what'd they take out? Well, when you look at the speech, that's where he mentioned God. And so his mention of God is taken completely out. And it's not like, and it was only four words that he meant. He said, forbid it, Almighty God. And then he goes into, after that, a lot of scriptures, but they cut all that out. And it wasn't they didn't have space because there's white paper everywhere.
Well, that's revisionism.
That's revisionism.
You aren't the revisionist. That, no. You're going back to the original documents.
I'll pull out the original documents and say, here's what he actually said. You know, and he quoted scriptures. I think in that, there's a section of that speech, about 10 sentences. He quotes over a dozen scriptures in 10 sentences. And that's Patrick Henry. We have another section of that book, Don't Know Much About History, that talks about the Mayflower Compact, which is Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so these guys, the pilgrims, come to America. They're sitting out in the harbor before they get off the ship. They do the Mayflower Compact. And it has an ellipse right in the middle of it, too. And you go, what's missing? And the ellipse is where it says, we whose names are underwritten, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, a voyage to... And they took out all the Christian stuff, all the God stuff. And it's just an ellipse there. And so that's revisionism. I mean, that's hardcore revisionism, not going back to what they actually said. And by the way, we'll get to this later, but this is the first ever printing of the Mayflower Compact that happened in America.
Now they did it. That's the original.
That's the original. This is the first printing. So I can open up here and show you what they said, and it's not what the public school textbooks say, but this is the original first printing. Now, it's not the handwritten document, but this is the printing of it.
So right before we get into all of this, let me just say to those of you watching that I know we're going to be countering a lot of things that you've been taught and that you've held sacred for decades, and because it's different, you're going to sit there and say, man, this is extreme and stuff. But just like David started sharing, we're going to go back to the original documents. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can argue with this. And I encourage you to keep an open mind and an open heart. Because I really do believe, and again, I say I came from a very conservative background, and I found out that I wasn't told the whole truth. Not necessarily taught against it the way that some people do, but I wasn't, you know, I just was exposed to a watered-down historical view of how America was founded. And many of you are going to be challenged, and I encourage you to just keep your heart open. I really believe that this is something that could change your life. Mm-hmm. Now, David, right before we get into this, I just want you to give a little bit of background about your ministry. Wall builders, tell them about how they could get hold of your stuff, and tell us what you do. What do you spend your time doing?
Wall builders is a name we take from the Bible book of Nehemiah, and we love the book of Nehemiah because it's the largest grassroots effort in the Bible. When they got the situation of having to rebuild their country and get the honor back and get God back in the center of it, and they surveyed the ruins, they all said, this can't be done. This problem's too big. And Nehemiah says, no, we can get this done if everybody will just do their little part. And what I love about Nehemiah is there was no great leader that did a lot of repair. The priests rebuilt their own home. The men of Tekoa built a section of the wall. But when everybody did something, it got all done. And so what they thought was an impossible task to rebuild their nation really wasn't. I think that's kind of where we are in America today. We look at what's going on in Congress and say, you know, I can't change the Supreme Court decision on marriage, and I can't change what Congress does, and I can't change the treaty the Senate ratified. You don't have to. You just work in your community. You work on your city council or your school board, or you work on, if everybody will take care of their community, we'll get the whole nation fixed. And so that's why we use wall builders. It's a great call to action. It says you're not responsible for everybody else. You're responsible for what you do. And when everybody does that, we're in good shape. So we start there, but we're also into what I would call historical reclamation. And you'll find that scripturally, any time that God moves his people into a revival-type setting, whether it's Asa or Jehoshaphat or even Josiah, it's built around history. They rediscover who they were. Mm-hmm. And so with Josiah, they were rebuilding the temple. They're getting God back in the center of the country, and they found that scroll, and they brought that scroll out, and they said, you mean we used to be like this? And reading that old scroll led to a national revival. Mm-hmm. It was a scroll that literally saved Esther and Mordecai when the king had insomnia. He couldn't go to sleep. He said, bring me something to read. They brought him the history of his own kingdom. And in reading the history, he says, hey, there's a guy here named Mordecai. Saved my life. I never did anything for him. And he read that just before Haman was going to hang Mordecai, and it saved Mordecai. And so all throughout the Bible, rediscovering history changes the course of history. And so with that 100,000 documents we have, what we try to do is bring that out and make it accessible for people to see. We post them on our website for people to look at. Original Thanksgiving proclamations going back 200 years, 300
your
years.
Your website, hope
wallbuilders.com.
They should have it on the screen.
It'll be on the screen.
You're talking, and mm-hmm. we encourage people to go there because I've been there, and I tell you, you got a wealth of information. How much stuff do you have?
We've got a lot. I know. I believe the Scripture. I'm a firm believer of the Christian doctrine that God's Word is inspired, inerrant, and infallible. Mm-hmm. It is accurate. We know that from 2 Timothy 3:16, 17. But I still get surprised because there's things that I just didn't think about. And so when Ecclesiastes 1:9 says there is nothing new under the sun, I know that, but I'm still surprised when I look at George Washington dealing with the issue of homosexuals in the military back in March of 1778. Or when I look at Thomas Jefferson and James Wilson, others dealing with abortion issues back in the 1770s, 80s, and 90s, I'm going, you guys dealt with that? I don't know why I'm surprised. There's nothing new under the sun.
Well, there's people that are surprised that the Word has things to say
Absolutely.
About these things, and they look at this as a historical document that is totally out of touch with us
That's right.
today, and we've got to move on. And then the same thing has happened with American history. They
yeah.
look at those things, as, that doesn't apply to us today. We've got to be progressive and change all of these things.
You know, one of the things dealing with that mindset that says we can't learn from history, we have to move on. One of the things that I found really funny is, and I use funny in quotes, mm-hmm. I've been involved in a lot of court cases, 7 cases of the U.S. Supreme Court and a bunch of other court cases. And back 15, 17, 18 years ago, one of the issues we were involved with was displaying the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments in courtrooms. Now, it used to be that it was easier to find the Ten Commandments in a courtroom than it was the church. I mean, hands down, mm-hmm. I think inside the U.S. Supreme Court, I counted there's over 50 depictions of the Ten Commandments in the U.S. Supreme Court. But we started having these suits brought where it says, oh, you can't have the Ten Commandments in the court. And the judge would say, yeah, that's right. That's religious stuff. You can't have it in the courts. And what the judge would say, you know, if you'd make it part of a historical collage, we might allow it. If you'd put the code of Justinian with it, and if you'd have the code of Hammurabi with it, and if you'd have some other things.
But that's revisionist.
That's revisionist.
That's not the way it's
But it also part. Proves to me the judges didn't have a clue what they were talking about. They thought that by having the code of Justinian and Hammurabi, it would dilute that and make it. The code of Justinian says blatantly, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we enact the following law. And you go, whoa, you have trouble with the Ten Commandments? And they were just told that we needed to dilute it. But what was really funny is they want to show the influence of the Code of Hammurabi on American law. That's what they kept telling us. Well, Code of Hammurabi, it's 300 years older than the Ten Commandments, granted, but it wasn't discovered until 1904. And so it didn't have a whit of influence on American law.
And I say people would just conveniently leave that point
They leave
out,
that out.
And they would leave people with the impression that 300 years before the Ten Commandments was given, this thing was a dominant force in our country.
But you know why it stayed buried? It was useless. Because when you read, I think it's 271, 281 laws, whatever it is, and you look at the laws, and out of 208, and say out of the Ten Commandments, you still got 10 laws that work today. Don't steal and don't kill, don't persecute. We still use that. Out of the Code of Hammurabi, some of the really funny kind of laws, one says, if a man accuses another man of adultery, then you throw that man in the river. If he drowns, he was guilty of adultery. If he swims back to shore, he wasn't guilty of We would never use that.
That's not exactly in the same class.
That's
as
not
the
same class. And so it was so. If this man defrauds you, go ask for 2.5 of his cows. And after you get. And stuff we would never do today. And so. Yeah. But the Bible and the Constitution are both cool in that they only deal with principles. They don't deal with specifics. They don't tell you to do this with the internet or do this with horses, or they say, here are the principles. And that's what makes the Bible so cool is yeah. man doesn't change across time. We have the same problems we had 200 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 5,500 years ago with Adam and Eve, and that's why it still works. And so people who say, oh, we've moved past the Constitution, we've moved past the Bible, it's old stuff. No, it deals with human nature, and that's what makes it principle-driven awesome. Rather than specifics.
So you mentioned that you've argued cases in front of the Supreme
Court. Well, I don't argue cases. I'm with the guys who do We're part of the team. And okay. So what we'll do is put together the arguments and,
so
and some of the briefs. Don't testify. At the Supreme Court, you don't testify. At the Supreme Court, you offer written. Because as you come to a case at the Supreme Court, usually only one guy speaks, and it's about 30 minutes for each side. But what the court has done is they've read all the arguments up there. So we help write the arguments that the justices read, and then the justices talk to the chief counsel and say, now you've said here, and they ask them stuff. So what we'll do is we help prepare the written documents that the justices read to ask the questions on the general counsel.
Okay, so have you gotten involved in any of the curriculum in our schools?
Very much.
Yeah,
very much so.
I'd heard some about that. So you are involved in what states?
States that we've been involved with has been California, Texas, Oklahoma. We've been involved with Kentucky, with Alabama, with Georgia, all these different states. And it really is kind of funny because I know that what I'm showing people is not what they've been taught. And so, for example, when I was appointed in California, there were three of us appointed to help write the standards. And what they did was all the teachers and others wrote the standards, and they gave it to the three of us, and we're supposed to review it and make corrections and send it back. And so when I got the set of standards, maybe an inch thick, I went through it, and I just flat tore it up. And I sent back, I don't know, 40, 50 pages, single-spaced, saying this is wrong. And I knew that they wouldn't know that, so I also included attachments of original documents awesome. And facts to show them. And I so tore up their standards that when I sent it back, I thought, I'll never hear from them again. You know, that there's no way. Mm-hmm. And about 6 weeks later, I got a call from the head of the California Department of Education. And she called and she said, Barton, we got the stuff you sent, your review. She said, I got to tell you, we don't like you. We don't like what you stand for. We don't like anything about you. But we went back and checked all those documents you sent. It turns out you're right, and we're going to include that in the standards.
Wow.
So about 95% of what I pointed out to them, they included simply because they didn't know they checked
shocked.
The documents.
Now, I'm not shocked about the South that they might endorse something like that, but California, now, that is awesome.
I tell you what, the irony that was, they actually would have come up with probably what were the best standards in the nation, but that was at the time that California went bankrupt, the Governor Gray Davis and everything. And so they never printed textbooks out of those standards. We got the standards together. They went bankrupt. They couldn't do textbooks. And so all the textbook basis shifted to Texas because Texas and California, those two states have 26% of the nation's public school students. So when a textbook publisher puts $20 million into writing a textbook series, those are the only two states that are going to guarantee that they get their money back. So even though you might live in Kansas or Wisconsin or Nebraska, your textbooks are written by Texas or California standards generally most of the time.
So did you have any input into the Texas?
Texas, the last two series of Texas textbooks, I've been one of the reviewers on that. We had six reviewers this time in Texas. And so of those six, I was one of the ones who got to shape and craft the final standards as they came out of Texas. And we included a lot of stuff. And the same reason, we're able to show the stuff historically that it actually happened. So as we deal with Thanksgiving, you know, we're 10 days off from Thanksgiving. Whole different view of Thanksgiving yeah. now than what they've had in recent years.
Praise God.
We go back and you know, it's interesting. We now in the history books cover the first and the second Great Awakenings, which wasn't covered. But any good historian will tell you that America does not exist if we didn't have the Great Awakenings. We also uncover the main preachers in them. So people may know about George Whitefield, but they probably haven't heard of Samuel Davies or Gilbert Tennant or Jonathan Edwards or others. They're now covered. Mm-hmm. Then we cover all the ministers in the founding era because John Adams, in 1818, a young historian asked John Adams, and Adams, that's 42 years after the Revolution. John Adams, old man. Hezekiah Niles doing a history book on the history of the Revolution, and he asked old man Adams, he said, you were there. I mean, we weren't. Our generation didn't see it. Who's responsible for what we enjoy today? And John Adams started listing preachers. He didn't list John Hancock and those guys. Mm-hmm. Well, he got to them, but he said, well, you got Reverend Dr. Samuel Cooper. You got the Reverend Dr. Jonathan Mayhew. And he's given these preachers. We've never heard of these preachers. But they're back in the history books now. So they will be covered. And so there's a whole different tone because we can show from original documents that's where the stuff came from.
That's awesome. And I know that you also do things like I've been to one of your White House, I don't know what you call them.
Well, Congressional Pastors Briefing. Congressional Pastors Briefing.
And so you do that how many times a year?
We set that up about twice a year where we take pastors, we allow pastors from all over the United States, ministry leaders of any kind, to come and be part of that. And as part of that, we do private tour through the Capitol with a congressman. Congressman takes us through after it's shut down at night. You get to go into rooms nobody else gets to see, basically.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed that. I've
done it. I've probably given about 200 tours with congressmen, and every time I go through, I still get goosebumps going
now,
through.
Now, are the people watching, if they're a minister, are they able to go to your website and find out information about
it? If they go to Wall Builders, we have a tab there on pastor's briefings. And they can go there and they can sign up for pastor's briefings.
Now, you also just spoke in our Bible college the last couple of days, and so I know you go and speak to, I guess, Bible colleges. Do you go to churches?
I generally speak to about 600 groups a year. So I'll speak to churches and Bible colleges and military bases. I'll speak to universities. I'll speak to law schools. I'll speak to judicial conclaves. Just about any group you can think of has got some history involved, and if it's got history involved, we'll try to share that history with them.
That's amazing. I can't imagine how you can speak 600 groups a year. There's only 365 days.
We had one morning where I spoke at a breakfast in Boston, spoke at a lunch in Indianapolis, and spoke at a dinner in Santa Fe. And so occasionally you get days like that where you're just crisscrossing. So.
Well, I don't want to emulate you. I travel too much the way it is, but nothing like what you're doing. But we appreciate
it. But it's good because people want to hear. And that's the good news, is people do want to hear.
I know. And your website is also a lot of information. And you got so many materials there that people can get. And, I mean, it covers just nearly every area that I can think of concerning history and godly influence in our history. So I encourage people to check this out. Let me just say that today, basically, we have been giving an introduction and getting you, letting you get to know David Barton, but he's got these materials with him. I mean, documents that validate the things that he's saying. And as we've already talked about today, I think that most of us have been brainwashed. We are the ones that have had the revisionist history. And we're going to go back to the original documents, and we're going to start sharing some things. We're going to use this Thanksgiving holiday as kind of a jumping off point. And tomorrow we're going to start talking about the pilgrims and what it was really like and what the true history of this is and the godly history behind these people and this nation that it was founded upon. And I think it's going to make a profound impact on you. If nothing else, I know that along with me, you're going to be shocked at how much we have not been told. And it's all of this information is available, so it's really just prejudice people are against the godly heritage that we have. Let me mention that this is David Barton's little track, and we're going to send this out to anybody who will request it. This is a free gift. It's entitled Thanksgiving in America, and of course it's very short, but it gives a brief godly history about our Thanksgiving. This is a refrigerator magnet that is Lincoln's proclamation where he made this an official holiday for the United States. And I have one of these on my refrigerator, and for years I look at this and read it. I could nearly quote this thing to you, and it is really good, some of the things that he said. And then also we have our teachings that we did 2 years ago with David Barton that just talked about American history in general, and then these programs that you will be watching on television, they're all available. This is taken from our television programs. We also have a CD set of it. If you'll listen, our announcer is going to give you some information. Please call or write today and request these materials.
Today's program is part of a 2-week series in which Andrew and David Barton discuss the origins of Thanksgiving and America's godly heritage. These 2 weeks of programming have been added to a previous 2-week series with Andrew and David titled God and Country. All 4 weeks are available on either CD or DVD as seen on TV for a gift of any amount. This entire series is also available for audio download absolutely free from our website. Go to awmi.net and click on today's TV offer to see all the ways you can get this teaching. If you'd like to receive the Thanksgiving Proclamation Magnet along with David Barton's track titled Thanksgiving in America, visit our website at awmi.net and click on today's TV offer. This offer is limited to one per household while supplies last. We'd also like to remind you that we're offering Andrew's latest book titled Lessons from Elijah for a gift of any amount. Contact us today to get your copy. You can use your credit card to order resources through our website at awmi.net. While you're there, you can discover more product details and download many free resources. Or you can order through our helpline Monday through Friday from 4:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Our helpline number is 719-635-1111. If the lines are busy, remember you can order ministry materials 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at awmi.net. To write us, use the address on your screen. We appreciate your generosity and hope to hear from you today. We'd like to point out Andrew's upcoming speaking schedule. Mark your calendars to come meet Andrew at one of these events. In the month of January, he'll be in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Woodland Park, Colorado. In February, he'll be in Woodland Park, Colorado, and in March, he'll be in Yorba Linda, Riverside, Pasadena, and Santa Clara, California, and in Woodland Park, Colorado. For more details on Andrew's next meeting in your area, visit our website at awmi.net.
I'd like to really encourage you to join me on January the 2nd through the 4th in Phoenix, Arizona for our Gospel Truth Seminar. This is going to be a special one with Dr. Creflo Dollar speaking with me. I was recently in Atlanta with him and we just had a great time, became good friends. And I tell you what, this man has a grasp of the gospel. We're going to have 7 sessions. Creflo will be teaching 3. I'll be teaching 4. It's going to be a great time. The Biltmore is a 5-star hotel that normally the rooms go for like $300 a night. They've given us a special deal of $139 for 3 days before, 3 days after. You could come and make it a holiday, but it's going to be a special time, January the 2nd through the 4th in Phoenix, Arizona.
Immigrants Leonardo and Iselsa discovered that the American dream was not fulfilled simply by coming to America. They struggled in the 1990s. Then, they found Andrew Womack's teaching entitled, God is a Good God.
Dios es un Dios bueno.
Oh, Dios es un Dios bueno.
Everything changed.
God is a good God. If it's bad, it's from the devil.
Discover the Jimenez Rags to Riches story for yourself.
For more information, log on to awmi.net. Look to the left and click on Ministry News. Then click on Today's TV News Story.